Topic. Today I want to do a Sefer review. It's a new Sefer, a short Sefer, Rashi, The Magic and the Mystery, by Harav Avigdor Banchek. Who is Avigdor Banchek? He wrote the five volumes, What's Bothering...
Yes, Rashi.
Banchek.
What'd I say? Banchek. What's Bothering Rashi? This person has... Does anyone that is entitled to write a book about Rashi, a general discussion, description of Rashi's methodology and his history of Rashi and a biography, and most of the book is pretty much probably the best stuff in his svar.
Never challenges Rashi.
Never challenges Rashi.
Very rarely, only when he agrees with him. He mentions.
This Talmud Chacham has studied Rashi for decades, written five volumes, and therefore he put out a little sefer, and as he calls it, The Magic and the Mystery. So I want to share with you some of the interesting ideas he presents here in this sefer. First of all, it's interesting to note, Rashi, and I have one good word for you, Machol, I have one fascinating insight that you probably know already, insight on the first Rashi in Chumash, the Rabbi Yitzchak Rashi. Okay, but he has a lot of historical information about Rashi. We don't really know all that much about Rashi. There has not all that much been written about Rashi and about his life, but... This is focused primarily on Chamishei Chumshei Torah. It does not discuss very, very briefly about Rashi's commentary on the Talmud and on Nach. He just focuses on Chumash. Now, Rashi was unique, first of all, in he did not write an introduction to his parish on Chumash. He broke all the rules. Today, at Barbanel, the introduction is... It's like a volume. The introduction, all of the... Half of it is the introduction. Good
this
chunk.
Is with Noah Hens.
But just talk about the introduction.
Yeah.
Most of the commentators, they enjoy giving you an introduction. Everyone we know from beginning to end who wrote a Sefer wrote. Rashi mysteriously did not write an introduction. That's a very... Well, we don't have it. Also, interesting, the first book to be published in Hebrew is not the Bible. The first thing that was published period was the Bible, in English, not in Hebrew. But the first Sefer to be published in Lashon Kodesh in the year 1455. To be printed in Hebrew in 1455 was Rashi's commentary on Chumash. There was no Chumash, just Rashi's commentary.
Rambam,
but even Chumash before that, the first thing. So that's how far Rashi went. That was the Talmud. But the first Hebrew volume to be printed in 1455 was Rashi's Parish on Chumash. Now Rashi, we know he's called the Rashi Tevis's Reish Shin Yud, which stands for Rebbe Shlomo Yitzchoki, which means it's a very unique way of referring to his father, Rabbeinu Shlomo Ben Yitzchok. But we have this new way of referring to his father as Yitzchoki. Hakinizi, very good, Hakinizi. It's something which is a little not so familiar with. Over the years, we've used the words Rashi to refer to Rabbon Shel Yisrael. Rashi is the ultimate, the model, the paradigm of the teacher of Klal Yisrael. His method, his style, Rashi was an Ashkenazi. Rashi was born in France. He studied in Germany for many years. That's where he developed. And then he went back to France to establish a yeshiva. Rashi had how many children? So it's questioned he had either three or four daughters. We know much about two. One of them appears from writing that she was married and divorced. And we do not know if she ever remarried or had children. And then he writes that there are records that Rashi had a fourth daughter, and we almost know nothing about it. It could be that she died when she was very young.
So who was your chevet?
I don't remember. He has everything over here. I don't remember all the details. But Rashi, it's... He had three or four daughters. Okay, Rashi, I think, lived to the age of 56, if I'm not mistaken. He died relatively young. Oh, I'm sorry, 65. Rashi lived to the age of 65. Okay, now, I wanted to say, he says over here in passing, he says something that's very, very fascinating. Many people who write Sfarim today, like for example, let's go back to the time of the Barbanel. The Barbanel used his commentary as a on Chumash as a way of expressing his hashkafa on current events. Okay, the Barbanel, he lived through the Spanish expulsion, the Inquisition time during that Kufa, when Jews were living through very difficult times, and he used that, his parish, every so often, he says, you know what's going on? You know, he alludes to what current events in his commentary.
Gracious, everything is through the palace of tree.
So he's using it as a means to bring forth things that are happening in the society. Rashi, L'Choyre, didn't do that. If you study the entire commentary of Rashi on Chumash, you don't really find Rashi commenting on current events. But there is one thing that some people, and he writes this over here, he brings this down, this is a very fascinating thing, the first Rashi in Chumash. What's the first Rashi in Chumash? Why did the Torah begin with Ma'aseh Bereishis? Why didn't the Torah begin with HaChodesh Zelechem Rosh Chodoshim? And Rashi says, because Koyach Masav Higiliyamo, to teach the world that Hashem created the world, it's Hashem's world, and therefore Hashem decides who gets Eretz Yisrael. Hashem decides that Eretz Yisrael, in the meantime, in the beginning, will go to the Canaanim, but Hashem will ultimately take it away from them and give it to Klal Yisrael. Why did Rashi write that interpretation as this opening words for Chumash Bereishis? So some want to suggest Rashi was commenting on current events. What happened during the lifetime of Rashi? What was the big event? It was the Crusades. This was the beginning of the Crusades. The Crusades, in essence, was a battle over control of Eretz Yisrael. Until this time, for the last hundreds of years, it was controlled by the Muslims. And the Muslims really took it away from the Christians many, many years ago. And it was now leading up to a world war where the Christians were organizing and they were marching to Eretz Yisrael to take back Yerushalayim. They claimed to take back the holy sepulcher, the holy land, but take back the grave where they thought Yashka was buried. But really, in the bigger picture of things, it was to take control of Yerushalayim, of Eretz Yisrael. And the Muslims fought back. And the whole war was a religious war. Who are the Ba'olim? Who are the owners? Have rights to control, to possess Eretz Yisrael.
Well, in Rashi's lifetime, the Christians had taken control for a short time.
Well, in 1096, which was the year of the first crusade,
they were successful initially.
Was
driven out by the Muslims.
Rashi was later. 56 years old.
Right.
He was 56 years old. And Rashi writes about what was going on in different Hayyam, in a different place when Rashi knew what was going on. But in the commentary, we don't find Rashi ever commenting on current events. But the first Rashi is obviously something that was on his mind. This is what he suggests here. I don't know if it's his own idea. He quotes a lot of sources. This was something that weighed down very heavily upon Rashi. It was a time when there was the Milchama. This is what was happening in the world. Like today, you go back 10 years ago, what were we talking about? 9-11. This is the buzzword. Ground Zero, 9-11, this is what we're talking about. Islamic fundamentalism. Today, we're talking about ISIS. There are certain things that are on the conscience of every living person in this world. This is the thing that people were talking about. This is what affected. The first Rashi is, it's Hashem's world. These Mishogoyim can fight all they want about. The Christians and the Muslims can fight, and they can kill each other, and they can world wars. But the truth is, it's the Ribbono Shel'olam's world. He gave it to Klal Yisrael. He gave it to the Canaan. And ultimately, it's going to go back to us, it's going to be taken away. It's Rashi's first comment, and it reflects the theme of the times. Rashi had his pulse on what was happening in the world at that moment in time. It's a very insightful comment. What do you think of that idea? It's a very interesting idea. Okay.
I thought you were going, but okay.
Okay, but it's something you can elaborate upon. It just throughout some yisodas. Okay, Rashi also was one. I don't know if he was the inventor, but was one of the inventors of something that we take for granted. We don't even blink an eyelash. The Dibur Hamaschil. Rashi, before he begins his commentary, he always quotes. He quotes a word or two words or three words, and upon the Dibur Hamaschil, he then begins to comment. That is something which is novel for the time. At the time, I don't know if Rashi was the first one to do it. I think he was not the first.
He was the first books printed.
He was the first book printed, but there were many. There were manuscripts. There were many. The Goinim printed things. There was Rav Aram Goin, there was Rav Sadi. Even Rashi as a parshan, there were those people who came before Rashi. He actually says who they were. People Rashi, there were parshanim who came before Rashi. But this idea to take to before you begin and you give your comments, you quote a few words and then you comment on those few words. That was a novel idea. Until that point in time in history, Rashi wasn't the first one to do this. When you would give an insight into a pasuk, I'm not exactly sure how you would refer to the pasuk, you just started talking.
We learn a lot of things from doing
from the Dibur Hamaschil, right? So he discussed that.
He says it, he doesn't say it.
Now, for example, every single parasha, Rashi used the technique of the Dibur Hamaschil, not just for his comments. Every single parasha in the Torah begins with the Dibur Hamaschil, begins with the first word of the parasha. Before he begins to comment, and sometimes there's no comments. He just says the name of the parasha, the first word of the parasha, and says nothing. There's a dot. And then he skips to two psukim later on, and then he's another Dibur Hamaschil, and he begins to comment. And many of the commentators, they're very baffled. What did Rashi mean in the Dibur Hamaschil, the first Dibur Hamaschil, where there's no comment? Is the silence, silence speaks volumes. There's nothing that he says the first word of the parasha, Vayehi Miketz, and I don't know if this is true, but Vayehi Miketz.
Well, one Sedra has the beginning of the parasha is the second pasuk.
No, but I think there he quotes also the first.
Second pasuk,
right?
Right.
No, which parsha is that?
Because
but he still quotes Vayidaber Hashem. He still quotes Vayidaber.
Yeah, Vayidaber.
He'll always begin with the beginning of the sidra that we have traditionally, where we read from, and then sometimes he will comment, sometimes he will not comment. Some of the early commentators did not understand this. They thought that if Rashi is quoting a Dibur Hamaschil, he automatically is there to teach you something, and if he's not writing something, then the absence, what is missing, is that itself is trying to hint us some, allude to some deep idea, which is not necessarily true. Rashi just wanted to tell you where the parasha begins. It appears that at this time there was confusion. What are the 54 parashas? We have a tradition. There are 54 sidros, sidarim, 54 sidarim, and sometimes we double up, and he's just telling you this is where the sedra begins.
Rashi makes that comment in the Gemara, because a lot of times when the Gemara quotes a pasuk, it leaves out, it stops at a certain point, and the Mepharshim tell you that the word they leave out is the operative word a lot of times. In other words, it stops on purpose at a certain point.
Yeah. That itself is a lima. Okay. So, I'm not going into great detail, but there's a lot of chokhmah, an enormous amount of chokhmah that Rashi used with the Dibur Hamaschil. And how he used it. But one thing is, every single parasha begins with the name of the parasha, and at times he does not even comment. He just uses it as a placeholder, as a mark, this with the parasha. But here's a piece of trivia. There is one exception to this rule. Parshas Kedoshim. Parshas Kedoshim is the only parasha in the 54 parashas where Rashi did not begin the parasha with the Dibur Hamaschil of Kedoshim, or whatever, how does Kedoshim begin? Vayidaber. He didn't say all the parashas, he begins Vayidaber, and then he says the name of the parasha. He did not begin with Vayidaber, he began to comment in the middle, of the, wherever, a few psukim, a few words into the parasha. And that is a very big mystery. Why is Parshas Kedoshim in a category by itself? Okay, Azazel has not an answer for that, but that's just a piece of trivia information. So you want to talk about printers making plans? You got to go to the museums and take out the oldest manuscripts. I wonder if they even have a manuscript Rashi himself.
Yeah, Rashi,
what?
Does he give a reason?
No, he doesn't give a reason. He gives a lot of reasons for a lot of things. He says a lot of chidushim. Some things which you not everything you'll agree with. If it's a schita, there's a lot of chidushim here, but
parsha before,
yeah.
Part, but he started giving me a thought that the parshas before that,
yeah,
discuss kedoshim. The whole parshas up to that point are kedoshim deal.
Okay, so we can throw in an idea that this is an idea that a lot of people to grapple with the Zoharites. There are gan parshios. Gan is the garden, but Gan is 53. In our counting, there are 54. So, how do you go from 54 to 53? So there are many answers. Some say that we're now referring to the Zois HaBracha, because Zois HaBracha you don't read on Shabbos, you read at the end of the Barasha. Then you can say there are a lot of different answers. You can Moshe Rabbeinu Mochina Mitzivcha Sher Kosafta, erase me. Moshe is not mentioned. Parashas Tetzaveh.
So we. Mitzvah
Vayelech is one parasha. There are many. So maybe this is also another solution to the problem. Acharei Mois Kedoshim is maybe really one parasha. Rashi's opinion, Rashi may be held that these two are considered to be one continuous parsha. If we happen to read on two different weeks, that's for technical reasons. We have to break up a parsha to two parshas. But maybe Rashi really held like the Zoyar is gan parshas, and he deliberately left out a Dibur Hamaskel and Dibur Parshas Kedoshim to indicate that the Acharei Mois Kedoshim is really considered to be one parsha. Okay, but that itself is a very mysterious idea. Okay, now in order to appreciate Rashi. The only way you can appreciate Rashi, he makes this point, this is the very big bulk of the Sefer, is to contrast Rashi with the Rashbam. Rashi, in multiple locations, writes that he's only coming to give Pshat, Lefarish. Rashi was changing the way people learned Torah at that point in time. The Gemara has a story where a person says, it says in the Pasuk that on Shabbos you're not allowed to wear a weapon. The Gemara quotes a Pasuk. Let me see if I can find it. The approach to learning Torah until the point of Rashi was not to learn the Pesukim literally, not to focus on Pshat. Here is the Gemara. The Gemara says, Omer of Kahana, Kad Havena Bar Tane Sresh Shinin. I was already 18 years old. The Havi Gomirna Le Lukula Hashas, I already learned Kolataruku Anushas. The Loi Have Yadana De Ein Mikra Yoitse Mide Pshutai. Okay, this is what it says in the Gemara. I'm already 18 years old, I learned the entire Shas. I did not know that you could read a Pasuk according to Pshat. I always thought everything in the Pasuk was a code, was a mashal, was a dugma. There's something called Pshat. Ein nikru yotze midei pshuta. You can be misled. It appears from the way he describes the history that until the time of Rashi, the Talmidei Chacham of the generation did not focus on Pshat. It was not in style. You read a Pasuk, you don't learn Pshat. You learn deeper messages. Like I was listening to two people talking. They were asking a question in last week's parasha that says that Sarah was she was 127 years old when she died, and the Chazal say Rabbi Akiva was darshaning and he saw the Talmidim were sleeping. So what did he do? So he says, how could it be that? Why did Esther rule over 127 Medina? It's because Sarah, her ancestor, lived 127 years. Therefore, don't waste any time. So the kasha is Rabbi Akiva is giving a shear. Rabbi Akiva is giving a drasha and they're sleeping? How could it possibly happen? How could it be that Rabbi Akiva, how could it be if today we would have an opportunity, a recording of Rabbi Akiva giving a drasha? Could you imagine today they would discover a recording of Rabbi Akiva? Such a thing? Who would fall asleep? You would be on pins and needles. So I'm telling you, I was eavesdropping this conversation. So it says, the Teretz is, when Rabbi Akiva was learning Pshat, when he was just reading the Pesuk and reading the Gemara and telling you what it says in Rashi, they slept. When he said the Chidushim, when he said the Torah, the Rosh Hashid, that's when even the most dynamic, charismatic, brilliant Talmud Chacham, when he gives you a shir in Pshat, the simple translation of the words, you'll fall asleep.
You have to know
Pshat. So it seems that this generation, the generation until the time of Rashi, they suffered very much from learning Pshat. It was not exciting. It was not something that was appealing to the Hamoinam. They didn't learn Pshat. Everything was a medrash. Everything was a mashal. Everything is esoteric, Kabbalah, Gematrius, much deeper. Rashi came along and says, you have to know Pshat. Ein Mikra Yotze Midei Pshutai. There has to be a simple interpretation of the Pshat. And Rashi, many places, I'll give you one example. Rashi says, Yesh Midrashe Agada Rabim Ukvar Sidrum Sidorum Rabbi Senu Al Mechoinam the Bereshis Rabba. This Rashi appears in Perek Gimel Pasuk Ches in Bereshis. He quotes, there are many Midrashi Agada Ukvar Sidrum Rabbi Senu Al Mechoinam in their place with Bereshis Rabba Uvishah Midrashos Vani. What is my role here as giving you this? Loi Basi Elo Lipshutoi Shel Mikra. I'm just coming to give you simple pshat. Ula Agada and Agada Hamis Yasheves Divri Hamikra Dover Al Oifanov Agada, that explains everything in its proper place. Now, truth be told, he says here multiple times in the Sefer that people who have analyzed Rashi, this takes quite a bit of work to make this assessment and to say this, is that if you will study Rashi from beginning to end of Chumash, you will come to with a number that 70% of what Rashi says is Medrash. Is not pshat. So obviously when it says pshat, pshat doesn't mean pshat. Pshat, pshat means taking a chazal and fitting it into the simple translation of the words. There are many types of midrashim. Some midrashim go off the charts. They allude to mystical things. And there are some midrashim you can actually read the medrash in the words of the pasuk. If that medrash, now what's, by the way, what is the meaning of a medrash? What exactly is a medrash? How do you define the medrash? So he says something very interesting. Medrash on me refers to events. This is a very unique definition. Events that have not yet happened at the time when the Chumash was written. That's how he types his medrash. Go ask an average person, define for me medrash. It will say homiletic interpretations. No. Medrash, reading events that have not yet happened into the simple reading of the pasuk is what we call a medrash. Generally not. Believe it or not, he doesn't say that. He says that's... So you have to study Rashi.
Wait a minute,
okay.
I always thought it meant like filling in the backstory, right. In between the lines.
Okay, he's saying many ideas, but he's saying something different. He's saying that Rubud, if you study, go through a parasha, and study Rashi, when Rashi quotes Medrash, you will find more often than not that the Midrash and Rashi are selecting in the Pshat and the Psukim are predicting events that have not yet occurred. It's not filling in events. The selection that Rashi presents is not things that from the past are not things that are just interesting in pieces of information or mishalim or limudim of Musar. Rashi usually, when he selects Medrash Pshat the Pasuk, he's referring to events and specific people that have not yet happened in time, gesundheit, when the Pasuk is being written. That's Rashi's selection. For I don't have examples at this moment in time. I do not have examples. I don't. I have a whole book, but I don't. I can't.
How could
Sarah was 127, like Esther.
So, well, Rashi doesn't quote that. Rashi doesn't say that. That's a chazal. That's nothing Rashi selects. Okay, now, Rashi was an innovator of telling the Olam, we're not going to spend time learning esoteric interpretations of Pesukim, we're going to learn Pshat. It just happens to be that Pshat, 70% of Pshat, is going to be based upon Medrash. But still, the goal is to read the simplest translation of the words and put into the words, if the Medrash fits into the simplest translation of the words, that's going to be Pshat. So now, in order to appreciate that approach, it is impossible to do that without relating to the Rashbam. A big bulk, a major bulk of this Sefer is the Rashbam. The Rashbam's grandson was Rashi's, I think his oldest daughter's, his grandson to his daughter, right? He was his grandson. And the Rashbam and Ra was very much influenced by Rashi. My grandfather was a Pashtun. He created this approach of doing Pshat. I'm going to outdo him. And now I'm going to criticize that Rashi, you claim you're writing Pshat. Most of the things you write are not even Pshat. I disagree. Now to really appreciate Rashi, you have to read this one Rashbam. It's the first Rashbam in Parshas Vayeshev. I'll read you what it says. It's a shocking Rashbam, what he says. Here it goes. V'horishoinim, So middle of the first, one of the first Rashbams in Parashas Vayeshev, the Rishonim, my predecessors, mitoch chasidusam, because of their piousness, nisasku lintois achare hadrashos shehein ikar. Every word here is measured in the Rashbam. My predecessors, due to their holiness, their piousness, they tilted, they geared, they leaned, they were slanted to learn drashos, which are the ikar. Even the Rashbam says, when you learn a pasuk in Chumash, the ikar is to know the drasha. What you learn, what halachic teaching, this is Torah. Torah is what halachic teaching, what instruction do we learn from this pasuk? That's called drasha. That's what my predecessors have done. And when they learn the pshat and the pasuk, they don't look at pshat. They analyze the pasuk in order to discover the drasha. Yod gimel midos hadra. Then he goes through. Mitoch kach lo hurgalu b'oimek pshuta shel nikra. They didn't bother themselves with a simple reading of the pasuk. My predecessors, they couldn't translate a pasuk for you. When they read a pasuk, they would right away tell you it's a gezeirah shava. They would tell you goes over here the yud gimel shatar nedreshes. There are 23
history book.
My predecessors, they couldn't translate a pasuk for you. You give them a pasuk, they'll tell you it's a gezeirah shava. This, just translate the words. What? Translate the words. It's a code. There is no translation. Everything here is code. Code to tell you halacha, what to do. I'll tell you what Rabbi Chaim says on this. I'll learn the Shavart, but I'm not going to tell you the translation. It's too foreign from me. Ulufi shamer chachamim. So the Rashbam goes, since the chachamim say, al tarbu b'nechem b'higoyon, and in fact, Chazal, they degraded pshat. Chazal said, al tarbu b'nechem b'higoyon. Don't be oisik in higoyon, which means reading psukim. Reading psukim. They said, don't do this. This is not for the Talmidei Chachamim. Another chazal, the galah gamam oisik b'mikra, mida ve'ena mikra. Mida ve'ena mida. If you want to learn psukim, do a simple translation, it's good, but it's not so good. Ha oisik b'talmud. But if you oisik in Talmud, ein cha mida gedola mizo. So chazal, they look down at people that learn pshat. That's what he says. The Rashbam says they look down. Okay, let's see. They look down at people. You're a second class citizen if you learn pshat in the pasuk. You learn. You say a pasuk. It's a code. Therefore, mitoich kach lehurgalu kol kach b'pshutin shel mikros. Hukdam b'sechta Shabbos. Haveinu bar tam neisreishin. I was 18 years old and I learned gan shas. V'gamer nekulu talmudu v'lohavu yadana d'leim mikros v'pshutin. But now he goes on. V'gam my grandfather. Rabbeinu Shlomo, Avi Imoi, the father of my mother, Imi, father of my mother, Imi Meir Einei Goyla. He gives cover to his grandfather Rashi. He was the one who enlightened the eyes of the Goyla, of the exiles. Sheperish Torah Nevimu Ksuvim. He wrote a perish of pshat on Tanakh. No san leif. He applied himself lefareish pshutoy shel mikra. V'yafani also I, my grandson Shmuel Bar Meir Chasanai, I the son of his son-in-law, my zatzal. His zatzal has already died. His father already died. So Rashbam, when he wrote this, Rashi already died, and his father already died. Nis vakachti imay ulufanav. I debated my grandfather all the time. I saw what he wrote on the pasuk. I went into his chambers and I debated with him. This is not the pshat. And look what he writes. So this is shocking. The hoydali, my grandfather Rashi admitted to me. Sheilu hoyoloi penai, had he had more time, hoyotzarich, he it would be necessary. Laasois perushim acherim lufia pashtus hamischatshim bechol yom. He would rewrite his commentary on Chumash. Vayeshev. This is the Rashbam in Parashas Vayeshev. Rashbam is writing this in the beginning of Parashas Vayeshev, that I had debates with my grandfather on the pshat of the pasuk, and I told my grandfather, you're wrong. Many things you're wrong. And at the end of the day, he says, no, you're right. Many times he told me he's right. Not only am I right, he says, really, I should rewrite my commentary on Chumash. I should rewrite it, and I should write it with more, with new interpretations that come up, new things that come up. There are new things that come up all the time, new insights into the simple reading of the pasuk that it's mischad shem b'chol yom. I would rewrite my commentary on Chumash. An amazing insight into Rashi. Rashi never felt that his work on Chumash was complete. There was more to be done, there were more revisions to be made. It's just that he ran out of time, like we are running out of time. Okay, now I just want to give you one example. Maybe we'll do more of this tomorrow.
Continue with tomorrow.
I'll give you one very good example of this because from this week's parasha. Okay, that's where we want to talk about this. We learned on Monday, we spend on Monday, there's one example and we'll stop. Maybe we'll do some of this tomorrow. On Monday, we spend time on why did Esav go blind? Vatichena Yitzchak go blind. Vatichena Einav Meiros. So I quoted to you 8 reasons. Most of the 8 reasons are in the Medrash. But when Rashi wrote his commentary on Chumash, he had the Medrash in front of him like on the tip of his finger. He knew Rashi, he only selected from the Medrash 2 of the 8. Which 2 of them? This example that I'm giving you really illustrates Rashi's approach to Pshat in Chumash when he quotes 70% of the time from Medrash. What does Rashi say? It's a great example to me. Very good. It won't take long to explain it. Let me just turn to the page. I'll turn to the page and we have there. Okay. Rashi. Why did his eyes become dull? Be'oshnon shel elu. The smoke of Esav's wives. Esav married in the previous psukim. Okay? And then Dover Acher, second interpretation. Kishneket al gavi ha-mizbeach, v'ho yo'aviv reitzel l'shochtoy, be'oysa shod niftichu ha-shamayim, this is Rome, Malach ha-shareis, v'ho yo'boichim v'yardu d'moysei menav l'olenav, d'chu ko'ko enav. Find that second interpretation. Okay, and then he gives a third interpretation, a third medrash, Dover Acher. Kidei she'yitol Yaakov, Es habrochos. Yaakov should get the brachos. So he gives 3. So the big mystery is, this is always the mystery. Rashi has in front of him 8 different interpretations in the Medrash, maybe even more. Why did Rashi select these 3? Why did he select these 3? So that's Rashi. So Rashi, I'm only coming to say pshat. Now the middle one is not really pshat. I don't know. I didn't read it carefully because he only really quoted the first 2. I didn't really appreciate. But he says something. He says very simple because the first one and the third one he give is pshat. What does it say in the pasuk right before? What does it say right before? So therefore, if you want to be meforish to pshat, dover al oifanov. Sequence. The sequence of psukim. He's blind. Why is he blind? Well, the previous pasuk told me why he's blind. Because since Esav's wives are offering keteris and they're causing smoke, that's why he's blind. So that medrash fits into pshat. You want to go give me these esoteric midrashim about the curse of Avimelech, the hiloch kesusei na'im? What does kesusei na'im have anything to do with the sequence of psukim? What's the next pshat? The next pshat is v'ata sonai chelecha, v'tel yichav v'kashdecha, and I'm giving you the brachos. So in this other pshat, in order that Yitzchak, Yaakov, should take the brachos, and not Esav, that is why Hashem made him blind. If you want to learn that this pasuk is going to be connected to the next pasuk, dover Allah. Fond of, there should be a sequence of psukim. So we'll take this medrash. The middle medrash about the Akedah, I don't know. That doesn't explain why. But at least it clearly explains why Rashi selected these 2 midrashim and rejected the other midrashim. Not because the other midrashim are less correct, but if you want to learn the psukim, dover alay fond of, to see the sequence, these 2 midrashim fit perfectly into the sequence of the psukim. So that's where Rashi utilized medrash for pshat. Okay, there are more things here.